This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb. Today we're talking about Black history in Indiana by learning about some of the historic African-American schools that existed all around the state and learning about efforts to restore those buildings to preserve the history inside them. With us now, we have two guests, Mark DeLossi, Vice President of Preservation Services at Indiana Landmarks, and Marjol Rush Collette, Board Member of the African-American Landmarks Committee. Welcome to you both.
Thank you so much.
Hi.
Marjol, I'm going to start with you. Can you describe what Gary Roosevelt High School is like for people listening who haven't seen it?
Well, it's a marvel, so to speak. It was designed and it has a Gothic appearance. It sits on about 21 acres of land, and it's a colonial style, revival style building. So it's very impressive as you look at it.
Mark, what makes this an interesting school from a historic perspective?
Well, I think both architecturally, which Marjol just touched on, it's an outstanding example of colonial revival architecture. It was designed by a really significant early 20th century architect by the name of William Itner, who did many schools in major cities across the United States. In addition, the fact that the school was built specifically to serve the African-American community and the students in Gary is it's sort of its primary significance. And the alumni that came through that school building were quite impressive.
Marjol, what impact did this school have in the early days when it was first built?
Well, in the early days, you know, Gary Roosevelt has been in several locations, and starting back as far as 1908, and then progressed, and the permanent structure, as we as we're talking about today, was built by Mr. Itner, and well, he was the architect, and 1931, between 1931 and 1933. And the premier principal of the school was Theo H. Tatum, who came in 1933 and retired in 1961. So the school, as Mark says, has a long and very impressive history, and many of the alumni have very impressive resumes, so to speak.
Yeah, I've heard that there were so many folks that came through there that, you know, the top teachers were recruited to come and teach there. What was it like for the kids who attended Gary Roosevelt High School back when all of this was happening?
Well, when Mr. Tatum was the principal, he instilled in the students that nothing came before education, absolutely nothing. And if they just say, for instance, there was an assembly, you could hear the noise and the applause, you know, on the next block, because that's how he taught the students. So it's been, you know, when I was a kid, Roosevelt had a separate building for kindergarten students. And so you went there first, and then you got to go to the big building. So, you know, during that time, even as a small child, you know, you knew that Roosevelt High School, Roosevelt, was the place to be.
Yeah, yeah. I can imagine when you're a little kid and you're looking up, you're like, I can't wait to get to that next level.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Mark, tell us about the school now. I mean, what kind of shape is it in? And do you know how much it's going to cost to restore the school?
Well, I'm not sure that we have an exact number in terms of the cost of restoration. I do know that there have been some efforts in recent years to try to find a new use for the property. Unfortunately, its latest use as a school was not terribly successful and is tied up with the state. Having taken control of the facility. But I know there's been a request for proposals that was put out to potential users of the property, developers, et cetera. My understanding is that didn't get a particularly good response. And so I believe they are still looking. We, Indiana Landmarks, listed the school on our 10 most endangered list of landmarks in the state because we were specifically concerned about the future of the school at this point.
You mentioned that the state has taken control of the facility. Is that typical in historic buildings?
It's not typical, and frankly, Marshall may have more detail on kind of how this has all played out. Again, I know it had something to do with the decline of the educational standards in the school, and the state felt like they needed to step in. You know, whether locals felt that that was the reality of it or not, I'm not sure. And again, that's where Marshall may be able to step in.
Absolutely. Marjol, yeah, if you can give us some insight.
Well, I'm trying to be as tactful as possible. One of the previous governors of the state, and with the Gary Community School System, basically sold out the school system to a private entity, and with that company, they were hired specifically by the governor, and they sold out the academic responsibility of the school based on a for-profit company. That company, in turn, brought in a subcontractor, so to speak, and then the school became Theodore Roosevelt Career College and Career Academy. So it's just been a hand-and-fist battle. I think that the people are just kind of frustrated, so to say, in what the outcome will be, but the school is still technically owned by the Board of Education, Gary Community School Corporation, and I know it's been said that they're trying to find a buyer, and it's hard to find a buyer for a building that was built in 1933 that's in bad shape. I think it should be made into a museum because it has such a rich, rich history. And people within the city, everybody knows about Gary Roosevelt. When I worked on the road with my job, I could be in California, and the first thing people would say, oh, did you go to Gary Roosevelt? So it has that type of reputation, but I just think that people need to come together and find something solid to make it successful again.
Mark, has there been an increase in attention towards the school in recent years?
I think there has been. I think there are many people who, as Marshall said, do know about Gary Roosevelt and its significance, its history, its importance in education. But at the same time, you know, we have found, at least on the professional side, that making buildings into museums can be difficult from a study standpoint. And so one of the things where there is quite a bit of money from the standpoint of tax credits and philanthropic dollars today is adapting historic school buildings into housing. And so, and particularly given that this is like 150,000 square feet of building right now on a very large acreage of property, it seems like that given the need for affordable housing these days, that could be a potential use. But you do have to find the right company, the right individual who would come in and spearhead that understands the community and its needs and affordable housing in general.
Well, and I think you would want to find a way to preserve the history instead of just coming in and building it into something else and people forget what its original intent was, right?
Definitely, definitely. I mean, that is such an important part of this building and what Roosevelt means to the Gary community. And so you can't just come in and, you know, gut out and make inaccessible to the public a place that is so important to them. So I think it's going to be a balance between, you know, how the building is used going forward and how the community can interact with it.
Marjol, we have about a minute left here. What are your dreams for this school? You mentioned possibly turning it into a museum. What else would you like to see as possible options for it?
Well, quite frankly, I really, right now, I can't see any other possibility that would enrich the community and preserve the history of the school. And even if it were a place that, say, we're open only in the warm months of the year in this climate where we live. You know, you could kind of cut down on heating and cooling and things of that nature, but it has to be something that will be beneficial not only for the structure itself, but beneficial for the community. And I agree 100% with Mark. When they're talking, oh, maybe it could be housing, I don't really think that's a feasible option. So it has to be something that's going to be suitable and bring it back to, it will never be what it was before, never, because we don't have that population base, but bring it back to what it was in terms of people being able to see it and respect it and understand the history.
I want to thank you both so much for joining us. Marjol Rush-Collette is a board member on the African American Landmarks Committee, and Mark DeLossi is vice president of preservation services at Indiana Landmarks. We'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about efforts to restore historic African American schools across Indiana. If you have any questions or comments, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today, we're talking about a few of the many historic African-American schools around Indiana, what we can learn from them, and efforts to transform them into museums and community centers. We're joined by two guests. Mark DeLossi is vice president of preservation services at Indiana Landmarks, and Kay Welton is the owner of Lynn Street School in Seymour. Kay, in our first segment, we learned about Gary Roosevelt High School in Gary. Can you talk about the school you own in Seymour and its significance?
The Lynn Street Colored School was built in the 1870s, and it was a two-room school with no plumbing, no windows. We had a doorway, and it was built for the colored students in that area at that time. It was built in part by my great-great-grandfathers. John Newby and John Maddox. And it was built with the purpose of educating the colored community in Seymour, Indiana at that time.
And how did you come to own the property?
The property had been handed down from my great-grandfather to my grandmother to my father, and I'm the previous owner now. I'm the one that's going to pass it on to my generations as well.
And how important is it for you to maintain this school and to keep it passed down?
It was one of my grandmother's desires to continue to keep the property in our family, but also to help other people in this property. We would like to move on with it, but it is in... it's in deteriorating condition, and we continue to work at keeping it from collapsing. So that's one of what we're looking at doing to preserve the building right now.
Mark, can you give us a sense of how many schools like this there are around the state, or is this something that's hard to keep track of?
Well, we think there's probably about 40 of these what were historically African American schools, and they vary in age, the time period. You know, one significant date where we saw schools of the period that Kay's building dates to is that in 1869, after the Civil War, a governor of Indiana by the name of Conrad Baker asked the legislature to provide for educational opportunities for the state's Black residents. And so a few months later, he signed a bill that said that all children without regard to race or color could attend segregated public schools. So you saw the start for the need of a school building that was specifically built for African-American residents of that time period. So when Kay says her school was built in the 1870s, that would have probably been in direct response to that legislation that was passed at that time. But then, you know, there are numerous other ones throughout the late 19th and into the early 20th century. And with the Gary Roosevelt building being one of the later ones.
If you're listening live right now, we'd love your questions and comments on the topic. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. That number again is 866-476-3881. Kay, what have you learned about what the school was like when it opened and what role it played in the community?
I learned a lot. My great-grandfather was an amazing man. He was a minister, and he was also a fisherman and a barber. And so when he acquired the property, he more or less started a goodwill center that was a free place for others to obtain food or clothes or furniture. And if people needed someplace to stay, he would help them find a place to stay. It was also used as a dormitory during World War II and for the African-American soldiers that were based at Freeman Field. So it was not just a goodwill center then, it was also a dormitory then.
It has a lot of rich history. That's really amazing. And what are you hoping that you can accomplish with the school now? I think you said it's kind of in some state of disrepair.
It is. And we are working on stabilizing that south wall of the building. We've been working on we've gotten an engineer assessment, and we've been working on bids for the south wall as well. Hopefully that once we get that stabilized, we can get the building totally renovated and rebuild the south side of the building that was fell down in the 1980s.
Mark, is it easy to learn details about the history of schools like this one we're talking about now? Are there preserved records and documents? I think we're lucky that we have Kay here who can tell us about this school and the generations that her family has maintained it. So, Mark, I mean, other than that, unless we have firsthand accounts, is there any other way to maintain the history?
I think it varies from place to place around the state. I mean, some local historical societies or other organizations of that kind have good records and can pass that information along to researchers. In other places, African-American history isn't as well kept as other histories in those communities, so it's sometimes harder to find. The Indiana Historical Society has a fairly good system of tracking African-American history, and so there is information on Black schools that is maintained there as well.
Kate, with regards to the school and the cost to repair it, do you know how much it's going to take?
To stabilize the south wall is going to run in the 100 $30,000 range to rebuild both sides. In 2017, the quote was $350,000 or more. So I'm sure with the rising cost of everything, it would be a little bit more, but we're hoping that a lot of volunteers will come out of this as well.
Well, Mark, Indiana Landmarks has helped fund a rehabilitation plan for this school. Can you tell us about that process?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great segue where I wanted to go to. So Indiana Landmarks has both its own funding sources through a program called the Endangered Places Grant Fund that we can make grants to various different projects. But more recently, since 2020, we've also had the good fortune of partnering with the Central Indiana Community Foundation on a grant that they make available called the Cox Funds. And as a matter of fact, we are in the application cycle for 2022 right now. So if there's any projects out there that want to apply, that they should just reach out to us. But the school in Seymour that Kay represents was one of our recipients of a Cox Fund grant in the recent past to do actual stabilization work to the building. So it's a really wonderful program established by a Lilly chemist by the name of Stan Cox, and with the Central Indiana Community Foundation, to be used for restoring Indiana's African-American heritage sites.
Is it a case-by-case thing when you work on these projects and the ones that end up getting funding?
Yeah, I mean, there is an application process, as I mentioned. So if somebody out there is a responsible steward for one of the African-American heritage sites, they are more than welcome to, you know, reach out and get in touch with us, and we can assess if it is an eligible project. There are, you know, many, many projects out there beyond even schools, African-American churches or, you know, other building types that would be great applicants for the program. So again, just get in touch with Indiana Landmarks if you're a listener and are interested, and we can certainly get you lined up with an application.
Kay, what are your goals for the school? Like, what do you hope it will become?
We're hoping to establish a museum and an educational center out of this building once it's done, to educate not only the public, but and especially educate young children so that they know there is more history in Seymour and in Indiana than the history that we currently see in our history book. It's really important for them to know the colored history as well.
Mark, what's the biggest challenge in restoring a school like this?
Well, I mean, specifically the Lynn Street School, it's probably funding, and that is a pretty common factor for many of these communities, is finding the necessary funding to make the repairs necessary, particularly when you're in a smaller community where there are many needs, you know, amongst the city or town, and finding the amount of money necessary to do, I know, what the folks in Seymour are trying to do is a challenge. But, you know, sometimes it's just knowing where to start. I mean, I think that many groups that kind of say, hey, we need to do something about this old school building, they don't exactly know what step one is versus the following one and what's after that. And I feel like that is where Indiana Landmarks can come in and assist. We have 9 regional offices all around the state through which we can provide the necessary assistance, come to them, come to their community. I believe Kay's been working with our Southern office, Greg Sekula out of our office in Jeffersonville or New Albany, And that assistance hopefully provides them kind of the way forward with a project. And so I know, as you noted, Miriam, the first thing they did then was the study. So what do we need to repair? How much is it going to cost? Just getting all that basic information together as an organization. And then that leads them to the sources to fund the project.
Kay, have you found that things are moving along towards the restoration of this building?
Yes. We have finished our engineer report at the beginning of the year, and we received that. And so that's a big start in knowing where we could start with that wall. Our committee recently met, and we are looking at trying to restore a portion of that themselves, our committee members. So hopefully that will happen within the next month or so.
Well, what is this project meant to you, Kay, from a personal perspective, and then also in general for the community?
It means a lot, because to carry on something of this proportion is it's very demanding, but at the same time, I know that my grandmother's desire will eventually be fulfilled. And to keep it in our family is specifically for generations to come. It will be something that we will be proud of, something that we will always be able to tell the next generations coming about.
Absolutely. And Mark, as we get ready to wrap up here in a few minutes, is raising awareness about these kinds of places part of the challenge? Do you think if more people knew about these schools, you'd find more help with fundraising?
I do think it's part of the challenge. I think that through the past, certainly 30 years since we started the African American Landmarks Committee here at Indiana Landmarks, I think more and more Hoosiers have learned about the challenges of restoring landmarks of this type, whether it's a school building or some other type of structure. So I think the longer we go along and the more success stories we have, like Lyle Station School, which has been fully rehabbed down in Gibson County, north of Evansville, or the Leora Brown School down in Corydon. I mean, these are all success stories of African-American schools that have been fully restored. So I think those success stories inspire and lead others to achieve success as well.
Kay, as we get ready to head out of this segment, I want to know what this would mean to you, the restoration being finished and completed. What would that mean to you?
It would mean a lot. We're looking forward to working with others to get this redone and get this stabilized, get it whatever it takes. And it'll mean a lot to me. It'll mean more to my family, because they've seen me work hard at trying to keep it and trying to maintain it, along with my mother and my brother. So it'll mean a lot to them.
And are you seeing response so far from folks? I think you have like a Facebook page. Have people been pretty responsive?
Yes, they have. When we have had fundraisers in the past, we've done well. People are always saying, hey, we would love to donate our time, and we will help do whatever needs to be done. So we're looking forward to this. And we're looking forward to watching the community come together on this project.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for joining us. Kay Welton is the owner of Lynn Street School in Seymour. Mark DeLossi is Vice President of Preservation Services at Indiana Landmarks and will continue with us after the break. After the break, we're going to talk about efforts to restore historic African-American schools across Indiana. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soap. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. The This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Back now to our discussion on historic African-American schools across Indiana and some of the ongoing efforts to restore them. We're continuing the conversation with Mark DeLossi, Vice President of Preservation Services at Indiana Landmarks. Mark, are rural and small town schools significantly more difficult to get restored?
Yeah, I think that they are, just from the standpoint that there are, you know, more limited resources to take on the projects, both from a financial standpoint as well as the human resources. I mean, you heard both from Marshall and Kay in their particular communities, Seymour, for example, being a smaller town, that, you know, finding that group of people to kind of rally around the future of the school and the vision you have for it and what it can be used for, and then to find the funding to get the project done. It can all be quite the challenge, but I'm glad to hear that they're rallying the troops there in Seymour.
Are you seeing at all, when you look at buildings that are in need of repair and restoration, such as these historic schoolhouses, that the ones that are in African-American communities are the ones that often aren't getting the funds that they need versus other schoolhouses?
I think that there can be some of that that happens. I don't think that is going on as much from the standpoint of when we pursue the programs that are related to historic preservation or restoration projects. There may be some of that that goes on kind of in, you know, in other areas, but I think for the most part, we've been able to be pretty successful in finding funding for African-American related projects in a variety of communities around the state, be it larger cities or smaller towns.
Right, right. I guess maybe what I'm wondering is, buildings that fell into disrepair maybe had less access to funding, you know, over the generations than other buildings, hence the need for bigger repairs.
I see. Well, I mean, when, you know, certainly when you can demonstrate a need to a donor or a grant maker, you know, I understand that what you're saying, that it's declined over generations. But, you know, certainly when you are able to demonstrate a need today in 2022, I think that donors and grant makers respond and they see the need and they understand some of the issues that I think you're referring to, sort of that generational history of a lack of investment, that they did not have opportunities to invest in these properties that white communities did.
Right, right. Well, I do want to ask you about efforts around Douglas School in Kokomo to restore that school. Can you tell us a little bit about the Douglas School and what makes it interesting historically?
Yeah, so Douglas School, of course, named after the abolitionist Frederick Douglass, was built in 1919 on the north side of Kokomo to serve there as a segregated school for their African-American population. It's interesting because a little bit of the research I did back when I was first working on that project, when the school board was debating, you know, building the building and investing funds for the African-American community, there was some objection to that, not because certain individuals didn't want to see the Black community have, you know, high quality facilities. It was more that they felt that schools in Kokomo should be integrated. And I found it interesting that discussion was going on all the way back in, you know, the 19-teens, that whites in Kokomo were standing up before their school board and saying, no, we should not separate the populations, but we should work together and be educated together. But ultimately, they still voted to create segregated schools. So Douglas School, as I said, was finished in 1920 and served until, I want to say, as a school until the mid-1960s. I do know that in 1940, when Eleanor Roosevelt visited Kokomo for an opening of another facility, she asked to visit Douglas School. And it was not a scheduled visit, is my understanding. It was her request. And so the people she was meeting there agreed to take her over to Douglas School. And so there are some photographs of her greeting the school children and the principal and teachers there at Douglas. So it has a long storied history in the Kokomo community. And so when it was vacant, I went there and visited with the city leaders probably 3 or 4 years ago. And there was an effort about to restore the building. And one of the leaders in that is Pastor William Smith, who is leading a community development corporation calling Embracing Hope, which now owns the building.
What kind of shape is Douglas School in right now?
Well, when I first visited it, it was in pretty rough shape. The roof had been let go, and so there was some places where there was water penetration and, you know, plaster falling and all different kinds of, you know, no heating and cooling systems that were functional. So the building had gotten into pretty rough shape. There has been some work done in the past couple of years. The city, before they turned over ownership to Embracing Hope, did put a new roof on the building. They did reopen the windows to their original height and put in new windows. So there has been some restoration work that has been done. So they're moving along with the project locally, and I think there's quite a bit of support for getting some work done to it.
Is there a benefit to an organization taking on a historic building or project?
Well, when it's owned by or there is site control by a nonprofit organization of the type that Embracing Hope is as an organization, they do have, I think, more access to philanthropic dollars. Many grant makers want those receiving their funding to be 501c3s under the IRS designation so that donors can get tax benefits for charitable tax benefits for making a gift to their project. So there are those kinds of benefits. It's also a way, I think, to make the broader community feel involved in the project. That, you know, if it's a for-profit business that's doing it, there are probably just a few decision makers who are going to be involved, whereas a nonprofit community-based project means that you can involve all different kinds of individuals and organizations throughout the city to help revitalize the building and its neighborhood.
Douglas School has been listed in the National Register of Historic Places. What effect does that have to be listed? Does it protect the building from being demolished? Is it more than that?
Yeah, great question. And that, by the way, is just a recent listing. It was just listed within the past month. Being listed in the National Register of Historic Places is a tremendous honor for a property to achieve that national recognition. However, it should be expressed that that does not protect the building from demolition. It does put in place some reviews under the National Historic Preservation Act, namely the Section 106 review, that means that if there are federal funds that are going to be invested in a property, that it will likely at least provide for mitigation from demolition or other projects that can be put in place if indeed a structure is taken down. So, but for the most part, I think that once a building is put in the National Register, it's respected, and I think it also opens up some grant programs, federal grant programs that are available, which can assist in restoring and revitalizing the property.
I don't want to go too off topic, but I was just thinking of things that are registered as historic or designated. Maybe landmarks is a different designation. Is that what it is?
Well, yes. So there is what is called a local designation by a city council, a local landmark designation. All communities don't have that potential, but that would protect a property from demolition, and in some cases puts a design review process in place to review outside changes, exterior changes to a building. So Kokomo does have a historic review board that could potentially put that in place, but I do not believe that at present Douglas School is not one of their locally designated landmarks.
Does it make it difficult when things get designated as something? My understanding, and I may be wrong on this, is that if you have a building or a home or something designated as historic, you must maintain it exactly as the past, like the doorknobs, the light fixtures, and it can be very expensive. Is that accurate?
Not really. I mean, the National Register of Historic Places doesn't come with any restrictions. You know, you as a private property owner, if you're doing it yourself or spending your own funds, you can do whatever you want with the property. So there really isn't any restriction there. With the local landmarking process, there is some design review through a board or a commission in that community, just depending. That would review what you're proposing to do, but it doesn't mean that you can't make the changes. For example, I've heard the Indianapolis Historic Preservation Commission, I've heard it said that over 90% of the applications in their districts or to properties here that are locally designated, those applications are approved. So the vast majority of projects are reviewed and approved, and people move forward with construction.
Do you know what the plans are for Douglas School as they move forward?
Yeah, I think that their intent is that the building will be kind of a community center / museum type of property, particularly that north side of Kokomo was where the African-American population in town was concentrated. As a matter of fact, just one block to the east is another well-known facility built for the Black community called the Carver Center, named after George Washington Carver, which is a recreational facility. But that was just the area where many Blacks lived in Kokomo. And so I think sort of heralding that history and the importance of that part of Kokomo will be part of what Douglas School's museum is all about. So they continue the efforts now at raising the funds, the required funds to fix the building. I think they're even doing a small addition to it that will allow handicapped accessibility and restroom facilities, et cetera.
What changes would help a group like yours, Mark, to be successful in getting these projects finished? Do you think there needs to be more support from cities and states to preserve history?
You know, anytime a local unit of government or the state of Indiana say, hey, we're going to provide greater funds or supportive policies for the preservation of communities, that is welcomed, certainly. I mean, I'll just call one out. The state of Indiana this year, through their Office of Community and Rural Affairs, created a program called Preserving Main Street, where they gave $2 million grants to two different communities through a competitive process to help revitalize their historic downtown areas. And we were involved in that process and in selecting those two communities. So, you know, there's lots of different ways that communities and government, you know, municipal entities can support what we do. And they are in many places willing partners, and we look forward to continuing those relationships.
We have a minute left here. I'm curious what your advice would be to folks who don't know why it's important to preserve historic buildings.
Well, they tell a story. Our history is oftentimes we learn a little bit in books, you know, in elementary school or maybe in high school, and then it doesn't seem like it's an active part of our lives necessarily from that point forward. So anytime we can learn about places in our communities and the important stories they tell, I think that is what we're there to do, is to make sure they're still around to tell that story.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us, Mark. It's really been a pleasure to have you on the program.
Well, thank you.
Are there any other preservation things that are happening that we should know about before we let you go?
Well, we are actively working in many different communities on many different projects, both acquisition of historic properties that we work to save. We love to hear from Hoosiers all around the state contacting us to let us know about projects that they think are important to their communities, that if there's a way we can step in and help them, our technical assistance, our site visits, et cetera, are free. And so we are more than happy to work with them on those.
Thank you so much. Mark DeLossi is Vice President of Preservation Services at Indiana Landmarks. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks for listening. This is All In.